They're answering number 47. It is possible for our knowledge to become a source of pride. And we said the answer is true. Any gift we possess can become a source of pride. And I just lined up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there are others in between. Whatever gift we possess can become the source of pride. That's why the more gifted people are, the more God humiliates them. It took me 40 years to learn that. Because he wants to make sure he keeps the lid on. He keeps them humble. That's the great danger with mystics. For example, in the morning of breakfast, last night I had a rapture. You had a what? I had a rapture. What's that? Oh, I had a mystic experience. Gee, you must be holy. And these are very important in dealing with people. And as a priest, often people may be just 5 or 7 minutes in your life. And you have to give them counsel. And the more gifted they are, the more humble they have to be. If they're gifted and proud, I'll pray for you. But you don't deal with them. Proud people are dangerous people. Okay. Echo. Number 48. Envy is the same as jealousy. No, envy is not the same as jealousy. Remember, we must have said this more than once. Envy means somebody has that I don't have. But envy is not the same as greed or covetousness. When somebody has something which I lack and I want to take away, that's covetousness or avarice. Or when it's really bad, it's greed. But when somebody has something, there's no possible way of my getting it. But I'm sad. That's envy. Jealousy, on the other hand, means that I have something which I don't want to share. Every sin of envy is really envying God. Yes. In fact, that's the most fundamental temptation, not just in human nature, but in all created beings. In other words, God has everything. Whether God, He is every perfection. We don't even say He has wisdom or has beauty or has power. We say God is beauty. He is power. He is wisdom. And, in His goodness, He shares some of that with us. Can God suffer? God is God? No. Can God lose? No. That was the primary sin of the angels. Most people don't realize envy is very subtle. Very subtle. So whenever we envy somebody else, we are really envying God, who has everything He has, with no danger of losing anything, and we depend entirely on Him for whatever you might see He doles out. Moreover, When I envy somebody else's gifts or whatever they have, which I lack, I'm in effect saying, I'm being cheated. Remember the parable of the vine dresser who sent out laborers some early in the morning, different times of the day, and finally just an hour before closing time. Then they all got the same pay. He began, remember, the head of that vineyard started with those who came last. By the time to those who came first, they figured, gee, we're going to get more. They got the same. Then they groused. And then, remember what the head of the vineyard said. Are you envious because I am good? Follow the logic? God gives some people more, some people less. Envy is a principal source of all conflict between human beings. Let me repeat. Envy is a principal source of all conflict between human beings. Main source. Wives envying their husbands. Husbands envying their wives. One brother envying another brother. Or sister her brother. Or brother her sister. Women envying men. And of all people to say that, Sigmund Freud, was not only not a Christian, he was not even a believer in a personal God. But Freud said, after 25 years of clinical practice in psychiatry, every woman that I've ever dealt with who had psychological problems, everyone envied men. He predicted the feminist movement before it got started. At any rate, 49 is true. 50. God is not unjust, but he is not equal with the gifts he bestows on different people. And the more democratic a person is, the more offensive that is. What kind of a God is this that gives some people much and other people little? Some people rich and other people that are poor. Some healthy and the other sickness from maybe before they were born. That's true. 51. We really love our enemies when we are sorry for the sins they commit by offending us. Yes. You know this lady, Celia Dawson, who come? She was here a couple of times. Well, she's from Italy. Her parents were born in Italy. And they're born in, their family lives in Latuna. What saint came from Latuna, Italy?
Maria Goretti.
Please?
Maria Goretti.
Yes. They're about three blocks from her family. It was about three blocks from the Goretti home. Now, she was being raped, you remember, by Alessandro, who tried to rape her. And she resisted. The reason she was canonized was not because she resisted. The reason she was beatified and canonized was because she kept telling him, look, if you do this, you're going to commit a mortal sin. You're going to go to hell. That makes sense? Because a woman who has done violence before God, if it is under force, physical duress, she doesn't commit a sin. Her concern over Alessandro's salvation. So then, back to the question. We really love our enemies when we are sorry for the sins they commit by offending us. And that, my friends, is not a very common form of love. And it takes faith to realize that by offending us, I mean really, it can be mean, cruel, that our real concern for them is because they are sinning and offending God. 52. We cannot say we have any other enemy except our own fallen nature.
True.
Do we have other enemies? Or no? No? Yeah. So, John, what do you think? What did you mark it?
No, let's go for true. Devil's our enemy.
What did he say?
True.
You said true.
Yes.
How many said true? How many said false? Yeah. When our first parents sinned at the very beginning, did Eve have a fallen human nature before she sinned?
No.
Did she have an enemy?
Yes.
Yeah. The devil. Then, she having sinned, I'm sure she smiled. And whatever she did, see, she brought it to Adam, and he looked at Eve, said to himself, I shouldn't do this. And gosh, I love this woman so much. So the poor guy, he gave in. Who was Adam's enemy?
Eve.
And that's, see, we're to love our enemies. But that doesn't mean we're going to follow the example or give in to what our, we love so much, somebody so much, we're going to do whatever they ask us to do. That's dumb. So, we have three enemies. The world, the flesh, and the devil. Now the flesh is the biblical word for fallen human nature. Okay. 53. If we keep our sinful impulses under control, no other enemy can do any harm. Now, if you were consistent, what would you say?
True.
So, how many of you said true? Compliments for your consistency. No. These are not trivial questions. These are important questions. The answer is no. In other words, our sinful impulses are our concupiscence. No matter how much we control those sinful impulses, they can be and are tempted from outside. In fact, listen to this. So, here's our fallen human nature. Remember that. It's one of my favorite definitions for fun. What people call fun is releasing their fallen human nature. Fallen human nature. So, fallen human nature is the lowest source of temptation. It's a constant source of temptation. The next is the world. The world as we know means the attractive, sinful behavior of other people. Attractive, sinful behavior of other people. Hey, what people do which is bad, and it turns us off, well, no problem. It's when their misbehavior or their sinful behavior is appealing or attractive. Oh, then they got problems. That's why all the great heretics of history were persuasive people. All of them. They had to be. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had any followers. But then, we have the devil. So there are three main drives, you might say, enemies that we have. So it's not just our sinful impulses. There are two other enemies, the world and the devil. You might say, well, how can we give in to sin then? Because we're not yet in heaven. We live on faith. For example, in our sex-mad world, people have to have faith to believe that we are to adore God by using our bodies according to His will. What's that got to do with adoring God? Everything. But I don't get it. That's not the point. Now we can defend on rational grounds, say, why chastity is a virtue. But the final reason why we are to practice chastity is not because it is reasonable, which it is. The final reason is because God is a master of our bodies. He tells us how to use our bodies. Contraception. Married people. Don't husband and wife have a right to marital relations? Sure they do. So what's wrong with contraception? You can write books talking about the evil effects of contraception. Every contraceptive society becomes an abortive society. But that's not the real reason. The fundamental reason is that God tells us how we are to use our bodily powers. Okay. So, sinful impulses may be under control, but we still live by faith. We do not comprehend why God tells us to do many things. We believe, and if we act in our faith, we will then do things which we have no sinful impulse toward, but we can be pulled by other people, or we can be pulled towards sin by the devil. 54. We may become angry at someone out of charity. Oh, yes. Indeed.
If we so-called become angry out of charity, is it really angry? Anger?
Yeah. Maybe
is
I didn't quite...
Anger? Is yeah. It true anger? Suppose we come with a reflection in our voice, what we say, is it real anger at that time?
Yeah. Yes. See, the problem, as I've said so many times, our English language is the most non-Catholic language in the world. Just, it's not Catholic. So in English, anger, angry, or derivatives, we usually associate anger with somebody being out of control. Was Christ out of control when he drove the money changers out of the temple? No. Was Christ out of control when he called the Pharisees whited sepulchers? No. Was Christ out of control when he told Peter, "You Satan"? Sounds like anger to me. It's anger, all right, but legitimate anger. As I tell people, we are to use our temper but never lose it. That's why we've got a temper. Okay. 55. Our lower human nature is opposed to every good. Yes. On principle. That's what our faith tells us. Now, by lower human nature, we mean our fallen human nature with its sinful tendencies. It doesn't mean those tendencies are necessarily sins on our part, but the urges are there. Number 56. A person is poor in spirit when he loves those who humiliate him. Okay. That's St. Francis. He is poor in spirit. He loves those who humiliate him. Now, of course, that poverty is not material poverty. Call it moral or spiritual poverty. In other words, whatever gifts I've got, somebody humiliates me, demeans me. Well, first of all, I believe that God is somehow behind that humiliation. And secondly, so what? Whatever I've got is not mine. It's really is God's. And if God wants me to, well, be deprived in my own estimation or in the eyes of others, what I really possess, so what? It's a reminder to me that what I've got is from God. And that's the hardest lesson to learn in life, my friends. Everything we've got is from God. Ooh. Too many gifted people. Too many. And spiritually gifted. It's the hardest humility to practice. The very hardest is mystical. But that does not pertain to most people. Most of us don't have ecstasies, you know, every morning or three times a week. It's God's way of keeping us humble, of keeping us low in our own eyes, because only humble people will get to heaven. Thank God for people humiliating us. Thank God. Wonderful. Wonderful. Does anybody know what this abbreviation means? Anybody know? Oh. Learn what it means. Pure Franciscan joy. I learned that when I was about 4 years old from my mother. She was a Franciscan tertiary. And she raised me from the little flowers of St. Francis. Stories, you know, about Francis. And that's the way I learned how to read. And then she told me stories about St. Francis. All kinds of wonderful stories. The Air Franciscan was out trying to reach a particular monastery, but didn't get there where he was going. So he had to stop at, well, a monastery where he was a total stranger. He went up to the door, another monk answered the door, and the fellow, the stranger, you know, asked for lodging. And instead of giving him lodging, he banged the door in his face. That's PFJ. In other words, are you really deeply humiliated? Not everybody, you know, is privileged to have that experience, but that's the way it is. Pure Franciscan joy. So poor in spirit loves those who humiliate him. Gee, thanks. Oh, my friends, what stories I could tell. But we don't talk about these things in public. Number 57. A person is pure of heart when he has time both for God and for the things of this world. What do you think?
False.
Yeah. Thanks. I was afraid. You never know what people are liable to say. No. Yeah. Number 58. We should expect to receive more from others than we are ready to give God. False. And that's a good rule. More from others than we are ready to give God. So, why complain? People are not as kind to me as they should be. My friend, have you examined your conscience, and how generous have you been to God? What's that got to do with how people, well, treat me? Everything. In fact, that's the way God shakes us. That's how he wakes us up. If everybody smiled, everybody was nice and just so sweet, just take it for granted. But if I find that not everybody treats me as kindly as I like to be treated, see, maybe, perhaps, possibly, I might not be as generous with God as I should be. That makes sense? This vocabulary is not complicated, by the way. It's not easy either. 50. Yeah.
Would that be a way of explaining the saying that people have, what goes around comes around? There's a saying that people say, what goes around comes around. In other words, how you treat others is how they treat you.
It can be. Yes. In other words, God will be as good to us as we are to others. And one way that he'll remind us that we're not as generous as we should be to him, because, no, other people are not as generous as we expect them. So what do you expect? Number 59. We are naturally compassionate with our own failings. You never know by the end of the sentence what that sentence says. Yes. We are naturally compassionate. Oh, how we sympathize with ourselves. See? Poor dear. We excuse ourselves. Okay. 60. We are not naturally compassionate with the failings of others. We are not naturally compassionate with the failings of others. Are we or no? No, we should be, but we're not. No. And Well, St. Francis, by the way, his charism really brings out of human nature. Number 61, we may never attribute any good to ourselves, not even the good works we perform, with God's grace. Like Sister Freddie would say, Father, those questions are tricky. So 61, what would you say?
I say that it is true.
It's true.
God's the
same. We may never attribute any good to ourselves, not even the good works we perform, with God's grace. Did you say true? Anybody?
True.
Well, anybody say false?
Yeah.
You say false.
Wouldn't that indicate, Father, that there was no good in us?
Please?
Wouldn't that indicate that there was no good in us?
Yes. I would tend to say that, what's that number? Number 61. I don't think that's true for the reason that you've just expressed. In other words, we do have a human will, we have a new human nature which is fallen, we call it fallen, but it is not in itself bad. In other words, when we cooperate with God's grace, we do cooperate. We perform the good action, not just God. Just before I came for about 20 minutes on the telephone from Iowa, a woman married a convert from Protestantism. Well, after they married, he lapsed back into Protestantism. And now he's giving her and the children all kinds of problems. He's a die-hard fundamentalist. So he's quoting passages from Scripture to the effect that every believer in Christ will get to heaven. Every Christian will get to heaven. His name is Kenneth, by the way. Pray for Kenneth that he gets to heaven. Now, we've got a free will. If we cooperate with God's grace, we merit before God. In other words, our nature is not, as we say, inherently bad. Number 62. We may freely talk about the special favors that God grants us. Now, these are not obvious questions. What do you think?
False, Father.
False. What do you think?
False.
True.
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 Well, I mean, hey, you're welcome to the answer, of course. This is a free country. But I think the better answer is, the key word is freely. In other words, just talking about the special favors that God grants us. No. In other words, we may, of course, talk about the special favors, but there better be a special reason for talking about those special favors. Because the normal reason why anybody talks about special favors, well, look at me. And they get put on, oh, what actors some people can be. How humble they can look. Soft, gentle voice. Oh, so humble. So humble, but so proud. And the more intelligent people are, the more they can hide their pride. So the answer is not freely. 63, St. Francis recommended accepting blame for some fault that was not committed. Yes. And notice, not for every fault. Now, St. Francis was not St. Ignatius. St. Ignatius, three centuries later, said the same thing as St. Francis. But he said, if either God would be offended by my taking blame for what I didn't do, or my work for souls would be hindered. No. And over the years, I've had more than one occasion to make that distinction. In other words, we may and even should accept blame for some faults, but not necessarily for everything, because if the blame would either be sinful, I would be condoning what another person is saying about me, which is then sinful. I've got to protect that person from continuing to commit sin. I say calumny, right? Or again, and very practically, if my work for souls would be hindered, I may want to accept the humiliation or the blame for something I didn't do. But then if I do, my work for souls will be injured, hindered. And I must defend myself. Okay. 64. Where there is love and innocence, there is wisdom and fear. Now, you have to have the exact words of St. Francis in front of you. Who looked it up? What's the answer to that?
He doesn't have the same words, Father.
Please?
It's not the same words. He said, well, there is...
What? In other words, here's a sequence, love and innocence, there is wisdom and fear.
No, it's not the same.
Do you remember what it is?
I can't remember quite well.
But it's not the sequence. I think what I did, I don't have my own answer here. I think I changed St. Francis' language. So as it stands, it's not true. That's what I think. I don't have the full text in front of me. That's what my memory tells me. It's true, of course, where love and innocence, there are wisdom and fear. But that's not exactly what Francis said. Okay. 65. If we tell others about the graces we have received, we are in danger of losing them. In general, yes. In general, yes. Now, there's just so much space I had in one line. I might have made it two lines. But there is danger. In other words, the best thing is not to talk about oneself, the gifts that God has given me. You must talk about people's gifts, talk about somebody else's, not about your own. There's always danger of pride. Then I gave you up to what number?
70.
Okay, so we got a few more to go. St. Francis wrote his letter, as letter to all the faithful, to everyone in the world. Yes. This, by the way, is not just because he wrote his letter, but St. Francis provided the church with a spirituality that is livable by everybody in every state of life. And his admonition or letter to all the faithful synthesizes his spirituality. And also, though I use the word Franciscan up on top, the word Franciscan has two meanings. Franciscan may mean describing what the Franciscans, whether men or women, do what they believe in, their way of life. Franciscan can also mean referring to St. Francis. And whenever we speak of Franciscan, certainly here, we mean what was taught or practiced by St. Francis. Because like so many orders in the church today. Not all Franciscans are faithful to the spirit of St. Francis. They, not all Jesuits, are faithful to the spirit of St. Ignatius. All Dominicans, faithful to the spirit of St. Dominic. Amen. Okay. So to make sure that we know what the founders taught, in other words, somebody who may call himself whatever name they give, who claims to be a follower, says that that founder taught 67, the cross on Calvary was the first altar on which Christ offered himself to his Father. Yes. And that is why, over the centuries, does your altar have a relic in it?
Yes.
Okay.
The altar stone.
Please?
Altar stone there.
Does this one have a relic?
Yes. Yes, Father.
Mean this altar here? Okay. And it need not be, but the church again recommends that it be the relic of a martyr. It does not have to be, but it's recommended. All the altars in the early church, in the catacombs, all of them, in the early church, were built on the tombs of the martyrs. See? So that the martyr then, uniting him or herself with Christ, who died on his cross, and the martyr or martyrs died on their cross. Yes.
Father?
And?
Could one say that when at Mass, Christ is willing to offer himself again?
Oh, he offers himself. Yes, he does.
Did Christ offer himself at the Last Supper?
Yes.
So that would precede Calvary.
Please?
That would precede Calvary.
Oh, yes. That's why we teach in theology that the first Mass began on Holy Thursday night and ended at 3 o'clock on Good Friday afternoon. You might say the offertory, of course, was much more than that. We cannot use our vocabulary to describe that first Mass. Yes. And remember, at the Last Supper, our Lord said, when he changed bread into his body, "This is my body, which will," future tense, "which will be given up for you." When he pronounced the words over the chalice, "This is the chalice of my blood, which will be shed for you." Yes. The oblation, Christ offering himself, was done on Holy Thursday night. The actual death took place, as we know, on Good Friday afternoon. And just as Christ offering himself and continued offering himself, let's say, from Holy Thursday night until Good Friday afternoon when he died, so in the Mass, or the Masses, plural, since Calvary, are Christ continuing what he did at the Last Supper, he continues doing now. 68. According to St. Francis, most people want to accept Christ and his teaching. If he said that, he would have been canonized. And this is awfully important. And the adverb is awfully important. It's frighteningly important. And living in an age where the lines become clearer and clearer and clearer between those who want to accept Christ and those who don't. And those who want to accept Christ, you end up paying for it. Going to pay for it, they're paying for it. They are paying for it.
It's going to get worse, Father.
And you don't have to go around, as I say, telling people to to oppose you, persecute you. Now the tragedy is, as we know, they can be members of your own family. Members of the same community. Only God knows. I know some of it because of the work I've been doing for the church. But only God knows the agony of thousands of dedicated religious in communities where the superiors became secularized. Like the sister wrote to me, I may have told you this. There's some stories I don't tell because I'm being recorded. But she wrote to me, it happened to me from the Detroit Archdiocese. I may have told you this one. It was sometime in the late spring, just finished her nurse's training. She was up for her last vows to take them on the 15th of August of that year. She came to visit the library that is habit. She's under obedience. Well, she sent me a copy of what this, shall we call her, superior, demanded of her. So I told her, no, refuse. And I sent the letter to Rome. I've been working for the Congregation for Religious some years ago, already then. And of course, they just told me to tell that nun to hold firm. I think I should say this too. That same community had two suicides among the sisters in one year. He went berserk from the pressure. So, I repeat, this is awfully important. And the price, we're dealing with mystery, but it's real. And the only problem we can have, the only mistake we can make, is to think there's some mistake. There's no mistake. That's the way it was from Calvary on over the centuries. Oh, what books I get published that I will never publish. Number 69. St. Francis encouraged but did not tell people to confess their sins to a priest. True or false? False. What are you talking? And confess often. 70, is that the last one? I gave you 70. It is impossible to love someone whom we do not like. Is that? You think that's true? Yeah. Oh, I love these answers. This is so true to life. Of course, it depends on what we mean by the words. You see? And the English language is no help. So, not to like somebody means a person is not naturally appealing. I don't like the way she walks, the way she talks. Like one contemplative nun. I just cannot. Every time you go to chapel, for the divine office, this one nun is always about 1 second ahead of everybody else. Warned by the superior, For a week or so, she cuts down, but then she gets back into her habit. See? So, is it possible to love someone who we do not like? Well, strange as it may seem, it is possible. Not easy, but possible. The essence of loving, in the Latin, I think, should be said. I may have said this before. Vele, to will, bonum, good, aliquid, to someone. Wish in English would be weak. To want what is good for someone is to love that person. And of course, you know whom we love, oh, so deeply, so constantly. The one person we always wish what is good, who happens to have just coincidence, happens to have our name. So, the person may be the worst thorn in my life, a nuisance. But Lord, help me, help me. I still want what is good for her or him. And if it is good for that person for me to smile, well, put on an act, do my best, but at least I am sincerely trying to show my love, meaning I want what is good for that person. Okay, that's number 70, right? Well, did I give you the rest of the questions?
Yes, sir.
Good. John Riolo.
Father, can we skip ahead to number 75?
Could you repeat the question? Or somebody, what did he say?
He'd like to read 75.
Please?
He would like to have you read 75.
Number 75. 75. John, I think we better wait, okay?
Okay.
In other words, this is 75. I don't want to deprive anybody of the privilege of trying to figure out the right answer. Because your answers are so interesting. What I thought we'd do through the... We should break up by a quarter too. I'd like to just... This is on St. Francis. I'm not sure whether people have ever heard about the Latham Foundation. You ever hear about the Latham Foundation? No. It's just as well. People subscribe to all kinds of magazines for me. And all expenses paid. Well, this is the Latham Foundation promoting respect for all living things through education. Sounds noble, doesn't it? Well, here are three strange creatures. See? Of course, they also are against abortion, human beings. But they're against killing any living thing. You know, this is a current issue. I thought to myself, hardwired, because I get this every month. Why waste your time? But then it caught my eye. This is on St. Francis' love for all living things. Two pages. All about St. Francis. All mixed up. In other words, what are you saying? Says that it cannot be possible to honor and love the Creator of living miracles. Every living being is a miracle. You know, if you had to watch what you're saying, I put it to you that it cannot be possible to honor and love the Creator of living miracles and also destroy these miracles wantonly as we do today. For example, this refers even to the nutrient ecology, you know, the protection of living things, not only living animals, but even living vegetation. This man is, what is he? He is the director of studies and for the study of theology in the University of Essex in England. And he just published a book called The Rights of Animals. We better understand our faith. Of course St. Francis loved animals. You see what they do? Of course he loved animals. But when he's talking about, you know, the miracle of a child being born, then the miracle, then a puppy is born, or a kitten. What's the difference? What is the basic difference between, say, the conception and birth of a human being and the conception and birth of, of an animal? What's the difference?
Soul. Soul.
Please?
Soul.
Okay. What kind of a soul does man have?
Rational.
Rational.
Please?
Rational.
Rational. Now, question. May we use the word create when, say, an animal is conceived? Can we see that God creates the soul, quotes, of a puppy or of a kitten or of a horse when that animal is conceived?
Depends on your definition of the soul.
Please.
Wouldn't it depend on your definition of a soul?
Well, pardon me. just like my Jesuits. Well, they'd ask me another question, see? I'm asking you a question. Oh, this is very smart. But now, will you answer the question?
Is the soul as I know it? No.
Please?
Answering it with my knowledge of a soul, my limited knowledge, okay, what I conceive as a soul, I would have to answer no.
Well, in other words, when a child is conceived in the womb of the mother, of course, that child in the first moment of his existence already has a soul. Does that soul come from the parents, or does it come from God by direct creation?
From God
by direct creation. When a cat I bought my biology. Do cats conceive?
Yes.
They do conceive, don't they?
Yes.
Cats conceive. Now, the kittens which the mother cat conceives, Can there be more than one at the same time?
Yes, so many.
Can there be twins and triplets?
Many.
Mother cats, can there? Okay. Now, when those kittens are conceived, does God create from nothing the, quote, soul or souls of those kittens?
No soul.
Please?
No soul.
It's also time. No. But we better know what we're dealing with. Because St. Francis, as you know, is used in many ways that are contrary to his teaching. It is time, Jeff, if you don't mind. So quarter of three then. Next week, I have to be in the East. I'll be leaving on Monday. I'll come back the week following Monday. So I'll not be here next week at all, barring something which the Lord may ground me in Detroit. So our next class then will be, I think the 1st of December is a Sunday, so I think it's the 3rd of December is our next class.
Yes.
3rd of December. And I'll be one day with the Tertians down in Washington, mm-hmm. and 3 days with the Contemplatives in the Bronx. This goes months when I have to, excuse myself that I couldn't come. So she didn't put it this way, but in effect, Sister Fatima says, it's about time. But I have, their jobs in the East. So we'll have our next class on the 3rd of December. Okay? Oremus. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Jesus. Santa Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et in hora mortis nostrae, amen. Regina, sine labe virginale concepta,
ora pro nobis.
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. And if I can have your, I'm returning some papers. These I think I'm returning.